89% of business leaders say AI is a top priority. The right choice is crucial, which is why teams at one-third of Fortune 500 companies use Grammarly. Grammarly is the right AI assistant for your team. With top-tier security credentials and 15 years of experience in responsible AI, Grammarly is how companies like yours increase productivity while keeping data protected and private. See why 70,000 teams trust Grammarly at grammarly.com/enterprise.
In the mid-90s, I found myself employed at a sandwich shop nestled in the far corner of a bustling shopping mall. It marked the beginning of my journey into the workforce, a mix of excitement and nervousness, having been raised with a heightened sense of caution by my parents. Walking alone was a rare occurrence. One day, after wrapping up my shift, I realized I had left my phone at home, a result of the strict workplace policies and parental limits on screen time. My mom was still shopping at the nearby Target, so I decided to head over and meet her. Little did I know that this seemingly routine trip would soon evolve into a harrowing experience. As I strolled towards Target, a silver car graciously stopped to let me pass. A brief exchange of smiles and waves occurred, a seemingly innocuous moment that would take a sinister turn later. Continuing my walk towards Target, I noticed the same silver car, now driving in my direction. Initially dismissing it as mere coincidence, my unease escalated as the car reversed its course, unmistakably tailing my every move. Panic set in as I altered my course towards a less crowded section of the mall. The silver car persisted, casting an ominous shadow over my steps. Fumbling for a plan, I reached a restaurant only to discover that its doors were locked, leaving me vulnerable in an empty parking lot with the gray car watching from a distance. Surge of adrenaline guided my decision to navigate through shrubbery, avoiding any direct path that would lead me closer to the mysterious gray car. Seeking refuge, I hurried into the nearest store, a dollar store, and explained the unsettling situation to a compassionate cashier. Graciously, she allowed me to use their phone to contact my mom. As my mom rushed to my aid, the man in the gray car, perhaps sensing his cover was blown, decided to retreat. Though shaken, we drove to Target unscathed. This incident left an indelible mark on me, shattering my comfort in walking alone. As an adult now navigating the world independently, I carry pepper spray and a pocket knife, a tangible reminder of that fateful encounter with the man in the gray car. The uncertainty of that day lingers, shaping my approach to personal safety and forever altering my perspective on the seemingly routine moments of life. My father immigrated to Manhattan from Peru in 1970. One night during this period, he and his friend Carlos, also from Peru, were approached by a well-spoken American man at a bar. The man, friendly and nicely dressed, offered to buy them drinks, and they spent a few hours together. Eventually, the man invited them to his Upper East Side apartment to continue the evening. My father, instinctively uneasy about the situation, was reluctant. But Carlos, fueled by the prospect of more free drinks, insisted they accept. At the apartment, things seemed fine until Carlos passed out in a reclining chair. Feeling uncomfortable, my father excused himself to the bathroom to splash water on his face. There, he discovered unusually large scissors, more akin to those found in a hospital than a household. Acting on instinct, he discreetly tucked the scissors into his waistband. Upon returning to the living room, my father found the man with his hand on the unconscious Carlos. Disturbed, my father demanded they leave immediately. The man resisted, telling them to relax and continue drinking. My father, insistent, noticed a sudden change in the man's demeanor. The friendly facade dropped, his voice lowered, and he produced a large pocket knife. Unfazed, my father revealed the scissors, locking eyes with the man. A tense standoff ensued, with my father declaring, "I've got scissors, and you've got a knife. If you come for me, I'm getting you too." Realizing the stalemate, the man reluctantly put the knife down and ordered them to leave. My father, keeping a vigilant eye on the man, practically carried the unconscious Carlos out, never breaking the gaze until they reached the elevator. The man stood at the door, glaring at them as they left. In the eerie backdrop of 1970s Manhattan, my father narrowly escaped a potentially dangerous encounter. A possible murderer in a city shrouded in mystery during that era. Let's not meet. Picture this. A century-old bar with a rich history, once a restaurant-bar combo, later transformed into a cafe-slash-speakeasy during the Prohibition era. The building echoes with tales of the past, including the remnants of bootlegging tunnels in the basement. This is where my unusual encounter unfolded. In the dead of night, I found myself alone, engaged in the routine of cleaning the establishment. Turning a corner, I stumbled upon an unexpected scene. A pool room occupied by two men engaged in a game. The peculiarity? I knew they weren't physically there. Dressed in old Western attire, jeans, hats, one in blue and the other in red, the apparition...
89% of business leaders say AI is a top priority. The right choice is crucial, which is why teams at one-third of Fortune 500 companies use Grammarly. Grammarly is the right AI assistant for your team. With top-tier security credentials and 15 years of experience in responsible AI, Grammarly is how companies like yours increase productivity while keeping data protected and private. See why 70,000 teams trust Grammarly at grammarly.com/enterprise.
Actions played pool with fluid, slow, almost ethereal movements. There was no fear, no chill down my spine. Instead, I felt a curious disbelief, like witnessing a surreal performance. Summoning my courage, I called out, "Hello, can I help you?" The words hung in the air as I approached with quickening steps, a mix of curiosity and determination propelling me forward. As I crossed the threshold into the room, the figure in plaid locked eyes with me, and in an instant, they vanished into the night, leaving behind a lingering mystery in the old haunted bar. Ah, the tales from my mom's Air Force days always had a chilling touch. Her stint as a medic led her to Landstuhl Regional Medical Center in Germany during the 90s, an era when the hospital held secrets and eerie occurrences. This particular story sent shivers down my spine. One day, she found herself in a wing of the hospital she frequented. Needing to reach the fourth floor, she enlisted the company of a fellow airman, as per the obligatory buddy system. The elevator journey, however, took an unexpected turn. Pressing for the fourth floor, the elevator defied its usual logic, traversing past it, going up and down without ever opening its doors. Upon finally reaching the fourth floor, an unsettling sight greeted them, an unfamiliar section of the hospital that seemed frozen in time. My mom, a seasoned insider, couldn't recognize this mysterious floor. It was devoid of life, an eerie snapshot from a bygone era. Standing there, her team hesitated, feeling an unspoken wrongness. The doors closed, and as the elevator continued its erratic dance, it eventually returned to the familiar fourth floor, reinstated to its normalcy. A puzzled teammate voiced the question lingering in the air. "What just happened?" "I don't know," my mom replied, and an unspoken agreement sealed their silence on the matter. In the summer of 95, I found myself a 21-year-old navigating the labyrinth of life, residing in the solitary embrace of the one-bedroom dorm at my college, an establishment that remained eerily open during the otherwise quiet summer months. Nestled between the lively embrace of two urban areas, the campus exuded an aura of safety, albeit one tinged with an unspoken weariness that seemed to permeate the warm summer air. By day, I toiled away in a quaint restaurant, working split shifts as a waitress. And by night, the camaraderie of friends beckoned. Our escapades often led us to a local dive bar, where the concoctions flowed and mischief danced in the shadows. Despite the allure of mischief, I remained steadfastly faithful to my long-distance boyfriend, a beacon of commitment in the midst of our nightly adventures. Yet beneath the surface of these seemingly carefree summer nights lurked a shadow, a serial rapist haunting the vicinity. The news cast a somber pall over our nocturnal activities, prompting us to be vigilant, ensuring that no one ventured home alone, especially during the witching hour when bartenders vied to prolong our stay with enticing offers of one last drink. One particular night found me at the bar with my confidant Bridget, sipping on sweet yet potent elixirs. As the night waned, Bridget, in her boldness, convinced me to let the bartender be her escort home. Reluctantly, I agreed, silently crossing my fingers to evade the obligation of repaying the free drinks and avoiding any untoward encounters with less than savory characters. With Bridget safely escorted away, I finished my final drink and departed the establishment. the familiar 25-minute walk home unfolded before me, a journey that traversed Main Street and meandered through dimly lit side roads, eventually leading to the secure embrace of the college campus. Though encountering the occasional peculiar character was par for the course, my secret weapon remained. A friendly greeting and an unwavering smile, a self-protective gambit to ward off the shadows. Approximately 4 blocks from the sanctuary of campus, I encountered an enigmatic figure, tall, robust, donning a baseball cap, and seemingly older than the usual nighttime denizens. Undeterred, I flashed my signature smile and offered a greeting. In response, he delivered an unsettling piece of advice. "You should go home now. You're a nice girl. A nice girl shouldn't be out." His gravelly voice echoed in my mind as I hastened my steps toward the perceived safety of the campus grounds. The following day unraveled a disturbing revelation. The rapist had struck again, a mere 10 minutes from the spot where I had encountered the mysterious stranger. The survivor's account mirrored my own experience, solidifying the chilling realization of a close encounter with danger. Despite the trauma, life resumed its rhythm, albeit with an altered cadence. I no longer walked the nocturnal paths alone. The incident left an indelible mark, a haunting reminder that malevolence could lurk in the shadows, striking when least expected. The perpetrator remained elusive, and the unsettling chapter gradually faded away as the school year resumed. Yet, the memory of that fateful night lingered, an ever-present specter reminding me of the fragile boundary between safety and peril in the tapestry of life. It was a brisk autumn evening, and the sun was casting a warm, golden glow across the landscape. I, Yvonne, a woman in her 50s, found myself engrossed in the routine of my monthly trip to the clinic. Living in Arizona, the weather was mild, but the stories of encounters with unsettling individuals lingered in the back of my mind. As I parked my car in front of the clinic, a one-level building with a history that spanned over a century, once a restaurant, then a bar during Prohibition, complete with remnants of tunnels for bootlegging in the basement, I took a moment to scan my surroundings. The building's character mirrored the stories of its past, and this evening was about to add another chapter. My keychain, adorned with a whistle, a small knife, a screwdriver, pepper spray, and a panic button, all in miniature size, reflected my awareness of the world's potential dangers. It was a violent world, and people like me with limited physical strength were often targets. My friendly demeanor seemed to attract unwanted attention, making me adept at setting boundaries with phrases like, "Please, back away," and my personal favorite, "Don't come any closer, because I'm armed." This particular day unfolded with an unusual encounter. A man, standing at 6'4", with a long, unkempt beard and a tobacco-stained mustache, blocked one entrance of the clinic. Despite having nothing against the homeless, I instinctively chose the other entrance to maintain a safe distance. As I approached, the man, whom I later learned was named Jake, intercepted me with an outstretched hand and a southern accent. "Name's Jake, little lady," he said. I declined the handshake, exchanging pleasantries but making it clear I was running late for my appointment. Jake, however, had different plans. He demanded that I take him down the street to Circle K. Firmly refusing, I walked away, only to hear his disgruntled muttering about my supposed mockery. The clinic's lobby, filled to capacity, provided a momentary sense of security. Signing in, I strategically chose a seat near an exit door, remaining on high alert. It was here that the tension escalated. I pulled out my Samsung Galaxy earbuds, intending to drown out the world with my favorite podcast. But fate had other plans. As the first notes played, Jake approached, demanding my earbuds. I stood my ground, and his voice grew louder. "Give me your earbuds," he insisted. Aware that I was armed, I calmly responded, "I don't think so." Jake took a step closer, realizing the potential threat. It was a standoff, a clash of wills, and a precursor to the events that would unfold. In the blink of an eye, Jake charged towards me as if he were a football player ready to tackle. Instinctively, I pepper sprayed him, causing him to crumple in pain. The commotion caught the attention of onlookers, two of whom inadvertently blocked my exit. Security and authorities were summoned, eventually handcuffing Jake. Physically unharmed but emotionally shaken, I retreated to the clinic's bathroom. The weight of the encounter bore down on me, and tears flowed freely as I grappled with the reality of the violent world we inhabit. To Jake, a man who may have thought he could intimidate me, you terrified me more than you'll ever know. The nightmares that have haunted my nights serve as a testament to the profound impact of that autumn evening. I hope our paths never cross again.
Percent of business leaders say AI is a top priority. The right choice is crucial, which is why teams at one-third of Fortune 500 companies use Grammarly. Grammarly is the right AI assistant for your team. With top-tier security credentials and 15 years of experience in responsible AI, Grammarly is how companies like yours increase productivity while keeping data protected and private. See why 70,000 teams trust Grammarly at grammarly.com/enterprise.
When we started writing our thoughts down on paper, it opened up endless possibilities. Ideas could grow beyond the borders of the mind, and it changed the world. Somewhere along the way, we lost touch with paper, distracted by devices made for every purpose except thinking and focus. On edge, waiting for the next notification. But what if new technology didn't pull us away from paper, but brought us closer to it? Listen. That's not paper. It's the sound of the new Remarkable Paper Pro, rewriting the future. A paper tablet with a true color ink display, gentle reading light, and unheard of tactility, with digital features for taking notes, thinking, and organizing, without any distractions. Paper is about to change the world again. Get your paper tablet at Remarkable.com today.
New year, same great savings. All in the Kroger app. Get Kroger Spiral Sliced Ham for 89 cents a pound with your card and an additional $25 purchase limit too. Then get large avocados or mangoes for 99 cents each with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.